Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Here we go, ladies and gentlemen, a very special episode of Offside Hockey Talk, sitting down with the goalie whisperer himself, Kevin Woodley. Hey, how's it going tonight, my friend?
It's good. Like, is the backdrop just for me with the brick wall, or?
It's definitely just for you, obviously. Obviously, we'll talk about the brick wall later on as well, but yeah, no, it's just for you. I came up with it a few months ago, and now it's stuck, and I've been wanting to have you on for a while, so I think we talked originally over the summer, and that's when all of this was kind of created, and then it just stuck, man.
I like it. I like it. I like anything with a good goalie theme.
Well, let's talk about goalie theme. I heard it on the Jeff Merrick show. I've heard it a few times. Where did the nickname the goalie whisperer come from?
Oh, crap. See, now I got to send Elliot Friedman like another $20 in the mail. I think every time somebody says it, I got to send it to him. It came from him. And it's certainly not true. Like, in terms of, you know, like, I think of a whisperer, like, to me, the goalie whisperer is guys like Sean Burke and, you know, Benoit Laire and Ian Clark and Francois Laire, like the guys that actually help goalies. I whisper about things going on in the world of goaltending that I learn from the experts. And so Elliot coined it, and I guess it stuck. But every time, like, I'm on a show or something and they introduce me as a goalie guru or a goalie expert, I feel like my beer league team just cringes because they've actually seen me play goal, and they're like, where is this expertise when we actually need you to stop a freaking puck? But as they say, those that can't do teach, and those that can't do or teach, they talk about it somewhere, and that is me talking about goaltending.
Well, no, I've always found your insight, you know, awesome. And I mean, remember the first time I heard you on the Jeff Merrick show, obviously I reached out, actually it was about something about shots and shot quality, and just asking if that was a thing. And I think it was with Jack Campbell to originally begin with. And that was a couple of years ago now. But your insight on that was good, because it made me kind of think, okay, A, maybe I know a little bit of what I'm talking about when it comes to spewing some words myself. And B, you kind of broke it down on a microscopic level of what it was that I was thinking. So I really appreciated that at that point.
Yeah, no, it's listen, like, it's funny, because for the longest time there was sort of this pushback on the idea of shot quality and it being important. You know, from the analytics side, and I get it in large samples, like, it, you know, if the sample's big enough, it washes out. But if you play goal enough, like, you know, like, you know, 10 shots from the bottom of the faceoff circle, if they're headed in a straight line, I'm set and square and in position, versus 10 shots from the bottom of a faceoff circle following a lateral pass. Like, you know, if one goalie gets 8 of the latter and the other goalie only gets 2, like, I like the chances of the guy that's only seeing 2 with that lateral pass built in. And that's just one small example of sort of, you know, and again, Steven Valiquet deserves all the credit for sort of taking this and modeling it out and tracking it, frankly. That's the hardest part, because, you know, even amongst some of the private models, a lot of the private models, frankly, don't include some of those sort of contextual points of data, traffic, screens, pre-shot passing, things like that. And, you know, again, when you play the position, you sort of, like, just instinctually know that this stuff matters, this stuff makes a difference. And we're starting to see that, you know, for lack of a better term, coming out in the math.
No, and it's starting to really shake out the way that it should. And then to the next point, I mean, they say, you know, show me a good goalie, I'll show you a good defense. And there's some argument, especially over on the TikTok world, that, you know, any goaltender can go in the net, and the defense, you know, if it's good enough, will make that goaltender look good every single night, whether it's talking maybe just, let's say, Kasimir Kaskasuo or a Carey Price. Both can be very great between the pipes if they have a good goaltender or a good defense in front of them. And for me, I've always said, I think there's a certain amount of skill you need to have to be one of the great elite goaltenders and steal your team saves and games. But the argument they say is, well, if you have a good defense, that goaltender doesn't have to do that, and it inflates their numbers. I want to know what your thought is on that.
Well, I mean, first of all, you mentioned TikTok. Like, clearly in my vintage goalie hoodie here, I am not of the TikTok generation. So my kids are on there, but I can't keep up. I am the olds. So I don't know what that debate.
I'll have to send you a few videos just so you can see this argument. And because I think someone like you would appreciate what they're trying to say, but at the same time, almost shake your head, because they're basically saying that a goaltender, no matter who it is between the pipes, if the defense is good, it could be any goaltender and their numbers will be the same as a Marty Brodeur and this, that, and the other. And it doesn't look that way. We can look at stats and black and white numbers and say it does not add up.
Well, like, I mean, but there is an element of truth to, and this is the catchphrase I use and have used for years, like, goaltending doesn't exist in a vacuum. So you are somewhat dependent on what goes on in front of you, like predictability, yep, and environment you can trust. Every team gives up high danger chances. Do you know where they're going to come from? Do you only have to worry about that chance? And are you on the same page as the five guys in front of you about where it's going to come from and what it's going to look like? And can you lock in on it and not worry about the three other passing options, because you're all on that same page? So to a degree, like, I've talked to some of the best goalie coaches in the league, and sort of this is the question I asked them, you know, over the years, like, if you could, as a goalie coach, build a team, would you take three, like, stellar centers down the middle, four great defensemen, or one world-class future Hall of Fame goaltender? And I'd say to a man, but pretty close to a man, they'll say, give me the top 4D, the elite top 4D, and I'll build you a goalie that can win behind them. So there is an element of truth to it, but only to a degree, right? Like, you still have to be able to, even in a good environment, is it likely that an average goaltender will post better numbers in a good defensive environment? Of course. And we've got lots, yep, of examples of that. But in those environments, what can the elite goaltenders do? And even there, like, there's no absolutes, which is what I love about the position. Like, there is no, like, this is 100% every time the way to do it, and this is what will happen. Like, we know goaltenders historically who have been really good in looser environments where they're busy and active and seeing a lot of shots and playing with a lot of flow and rhythm, put them behind a great defensive team and they struggle because they're not busy and they lose some of that timing that their style relied upon. So
Pekka-Rinne?
Pekka became an elite puck handler in large part because he needed to be engaged in the game. Yep. Eventually he becomes one of the few to actually score a goal because under Peter Laviolette, he wasn't as busy and he lacked that rhythm and timing. And Pekka was a guy who, despite being such a monster in the crease physically, the presence, the size, the height, played with a lot of backwards flow. And the irony to me was, it was UC Saros, who we see as the undersized, you know, every man's goalie now in the league, coming in and playing more conservatively positionally than Pekka, that sort of opened Pekka's eyes to, like, man, like, if he's playing back here, I sure as hell don't need to be way out there. And that's, yeah, maybe a bit of an exaggeration, but, like, he actually, you know, played a more conservative style after that. So there's sort of that all constant evolution, both as individual goaltenders and preferences and sort of not so much styles, but tactics and technique. And then you've also got how you fit that within a unique goaltending environment, like a unique defensive environment, sorry. And that, you know, it changes. So at the end of the day, a good defense, yes, you can absolutely prop up, you know, average goaltending and make it look like Vezina caliber on a raw number standpoint. And some of the swings are just wild around the league in terms of what the expected environment looks like. When Eric Comrie was sent to the minor leagues, you know, went through waivers earlier, I think it was this month or late December, yeah, early January, his expected save percentage was .850, which was one of the lowest I've seen for a goalie that had played that much. Like, it just seemed like every night he was out there for the Sabres, it was a shooting gallery, yeah, of high quality chances. And so, and then there's guys with expected save percentages that are like over .900. That tends not to last. It's pretty rare. But obviously in that environment, you know, you outplay it by a little bit, and that's how you end up with some really good numbers. You can still outplay a good environment. What's really what I'm starting to, again, no absolutes, but what I'm starting to see is you can't outplay or can only outplay for so long a really bad environment. Like,
yeah,
it doesn't seem to matter who you are. Eventually that catches up with you, and it's almost exponential. If you're playing behind a team that's in the sort of, you know, low to mid 20s, you know, rankings wise in terms of where they are defensively, the difference between say 23 to 29 to 32, it's not six to, you know, nine spots. It's actually exponential. Once you get into those bottom tiers, like some of the stuff they're giving up is just, you know, it's really hard for the goalie to read plays, behind it, and then things tend to snowball. Now the goalie's trying to do somebody else's job because they're not doing it, and then they're trying to do the goalie's job because he's struggling. Like, once you get into that real bottom tier, man, it's hard for goalies to hold water. We saw this with Thatcher Demko last year, you know, at the start of the year.
I was going to say, yeah, there's a big difference between Thatcher this year and then last year.
Yeah, it's because he's not playing in a bottom three defensive environment, right? Like, that's essentially, I mean, eventually he got hurt last year. But he wasn't hurt. I mean, he wasn't 100%, but it wasn't injuries at the start of the season. It was just a terrible defensive environment. And that's where I started to realize once I start seeing teams ranked 29th, especially off the rush in terms of what they give up, like rush chances kill. That's where the majority of your high quality, like those are the high quality chances that goalies can only do so much about. I remember talking to Robin Lehner about this when he was in with the Islanders after coming from Buffalo. And he's like, simple. Like when I was in Buffalo, we would give up four or five odd man rushes a night. And when I'm in New York, we give up, you know, one or two odd man rushes every two games. And like the way he explained it to me, and it makes a ton of sense. Like if we give up odd man rushes and I'm on my game feeling good, and we give up four, I could be at my best and they still might score on two of those.
Yep.
They're at least scoring on one out of four. Well, if all of a sudden it's every four games we give up four with the Islanders, of course it's going to look better. The numbers are going to look better. And so an oversimplification perhaps, but you know, once you get into those teams that are just bleeding rush chances, saw that with Vancouver last year, Edmonton at the start of this year, right? Like,
yeah,
Stuart Skinner from what are we going to do? What are we going to do with this guy at the beginning when they were one of the worst teams against the rush in the entire National Hockey League? Since the coaching change and a little grace period there was an Eastern Conference swing where a lot of those habits remained. But after that, they sort of got home and got settled and got into the systems under the new head coach and got, it's not even systems. It's not taking risks at the offensive end that put you in a bad spot defensively against odd man rushes. Like all of a sudden, Stuart Skinner's playing at a Vezina caliber level. Well, what's changed? Like for sure, his confidence is growing. And he deserves a ton of credit for the maturity he showed, the growth mindset he's always had, and he's a good goalie sort of to get through that. But at the end of the day, they went from bottom three in the league to they are now top three in the league since the change in terms of rush chances again. So you tell me what the big difference is. It's pretty obvious. There are certain types of chances that you give up. And when I say rush chances, I mean the highest danger rush chances. That's that they were giving up more expected goals 5-on-5 against the rush, and now they're amongst the league's best. Their goaltending looks better, right? Like if you give up a ton of five alarm chances, the puck's going in the net. I don't care who you are. There are only a handful of guys that can outplay a really poor defensive environment for extended periods. And I don't think there's anybody that can do it season in, season out.
No, there's no one that can do it right now. Maybe the closest might be the Cat Vasilevsky, but that's about the only one I can think of that can kind of sustain maybe that play for a bit.
Well, but there, and even then, and they have leaned on him more this year, but when they won cups, like the year they got knocked out in the first round, 5-on-5 high danger chances against, they ranked in the 20s. The first year they won the cup, they were top three. Like that metric is so important, and so much of it comes out of what you give up off the rush. And them as a team going from, you know, disappointment in the first round to, you know, back-to-back Stanley Cups and three straight cup final appearances was largely improvements in that area. And then in subsequent years, they didn't maintain it during the regular season, but they had it in their DNA. And once the playoffs hit, they went back to being that team and not giving up those types of chances.
So now we know what the Leafs need to do. Well, figure that part out for their further goaltending, but we're going to get to them in a second. I want to ask you a question about big market goaltenders first. Obviously places like New York, Toronto, Montreal, even Vancouver, where the media and the circus is there. You look at, I'll use Toronto as an example right now. You look at Jack Campbell when he was here. down on himself, talking to himself in the media, you know, beating himself up. Samsonov, same thing. Guys are kind of, when the big lights are on, seems like the pressure is kind of bothering them a bit. I'm wondering for you, do you think that plays a factor into these guys with the media and all the hoopla and everything and the pressure of those markets? Does it hurt a goaltender? Or in your view of it, do these guys really tune that stuff out and just worry about their everyday-to-day stuff? Because with Samsonov today, it seemed like he was trying to let everybody know, hey, it did get to me. My dad came down and talked to me. My wife's always trying to pump me up. And now I'm ready to get back to where I need to be and keep rolling with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's harder. Like, it adds another layer that some guys don't have to deal with, right? Like, it's simple as that, right? And yet, you know, I don't think Winnipeg's a soft market in terms of media focus. It may not be as big a market as the other ones you mentioned, but it's a Canadian market and the focus is always there. And Connor Hellebuyck hasn't let that bug him. And he's an intellectual, a guy as you'll meet when it comes to sort of breaking down the position and talking about goaltending. So, you know, Thatcher Demko here doesn't give us much in the media, frankly. Like, I have a great relationship with him. We talk goaltending. But when it comes to sort of post-game scrums and stuff, like, you better make sure you ask good questions if you want a good answer, right? If you ask a question that's got a yes or no, he'll just give you a yes or no. And so he hasn't engaged as actively. You know, I think Campbell and Samsonov wear their hearts on their sleeves. And, you know, at times that's a bit of a, I'll say, risky proposition, because I admire it. But, you know, it certainly brightens an already bright spotlight on those guys, you know, and Jack, you know, Jack's is hard on that. There's the interesting thing. Like, Jack's obviously hard on himself, right? Thatcher Demko is incredibly hard on himself. His expectations of himself and what he's capable of doing are as high as anyone I've met. And yet their approach to the media is entirely different. And I think Jack's vulnerability at times exposes him to further questions. Whereas the media here in Vancouver may not always like the lack of engagement with Thatcher, or the dismissive isn't the right word. I'm trying to think of the right word to use in terms of some of his answers. He's curt in his response. And you know, most media don't like that. And I don't, you know, you're trying to fill stories and get quotes and things like that. And he doesn't, you go fishing for a quote, he doesn't always give it to you. Yet that just sort of reduces you're not getting asked as many questions. You're not getting asked for as much time. When you open yourself up and you're in as vulnerable and exposed as those guys have been in that Toronto market, you know, that opens the door to further questions about your emotions, about your mindset, about your mental health, about how you're feeling, and ensures that you're answering and talking about these things maybe more than might be ideal for any goaltender.
No, that's a fair shake. And that's something you don't really think about. Obviously, the more you share, I guess the more you open yourself to scrutiny, the more you open yourself to people talking about what you're saying. And we know nowadays everyone picks apart every single word. So if you don't choose it correctly, or if you don't answer it correctly, or if you give too much, it gives people too much to talk about. And in the case of Campbell and Samsonov, and even, you know, you look down the list of different goaltenders over the years that have said things in Toronto, you know, they question the mindset, they question the resolve, so to speak. So that makes sense to me. One guy who's got a lot of resolve for the Maple Leafs right now is Chris Sanford, working with these goaltenders. What is his style? What does he get into with these guys? And really, what does he bring that maybe the Leafs haven't had before? I remember the different goggle vision, I think it was last year with Matt Murray. I don't know if that was Sanford. I think it was. But just trying to get these guys on track.
No, I think Matt probably brought that himself from some of the other work he'd done. Like, he brought that to the equation. Actually, you know, funny enough, there's a different product that does better things that was talking with Curtis about when they were through town here. To me, what Curtis brings is a combination of sort of cutting edge technical work, but with the understanding of having played the position.
Yeah.
And having gone through changes in his career and evolution in his career. Like, he's, you know, I got to know Curtis here in Vancouver. He's very much a student of Ian Clark's philosophy. And obviously Ian Clark, you know, probably doesn't outside of this market get talked about in the same terms as a Benoit Allaire, a Francois Allaire, or, you know, some of the, you know, the big names in the world of goalie coaching. But he's a guy that's had a ton of success long ago. I look at Markstrom, you look at Demko here, you look at Sergei Bobrovsky winning his two Vezina trophies in Columbus under Ian Clark. You know, and he's a guy who on the teaching side, like, has just shared prolific amounts of information over there. This is actually how I got into goaltending. Was Ian Clark hired me to edit his now defunct magazine called Goalie News. It was a printed product, and I edited his technical material, which is how I came to this and how I started learning about the position, because the way he coaches was the same way he wrote. It wasn't do this because I say so and I'm the goalie coach. It was, here is the science, and you know, get into squareness and positioning. Like, there's a reason for this. There's a full explanation, so that you're not just asked to do it. You're supposed to, you know, you're given an opportunity to understand the why. And so that helped me getting into the position, and it helped sort of open up these conversations that I get to have with goalies now, because I was asking them questions in a language they spoke at a time when nobody else was really doing that, right? Like, there are more people doing that kind of stuff now. But you know, back then, not so much. So, you know, it's, sorry, I'm just putting this on, do not disturb. I got a phone call coming in there. My apologies. And Curtis was one of those goalies. Curtis was one of those goalies here in Vancouver that sort of, and reinvented his game a little bit, modernized it at a certain stage of his career under Ian Clark, and then worked under him or with him, as a goalie development coach here in Vancouver. So when I see guys move around, when I see Joseph Wohl on the ice with Curtis, as he was here in Vancouver, get to watch that, I see a lot of the technical staples, the movement foundations, the post play, the stress, the points that are of emphasis, I guess I should say, rather than stressed, you know, early eyes, rotation. I see a lot of same things technically and tactically being taught that came from Ian. And Ian's a taskmaster. Like, he pushes, he expects, like, if we're the most important players on the ice as goalies, we should be the hardest working guys on the ice. And he pushes his goalies as hard as anyone I've ever seen. And Curtis, I'm not saying he doesn't push them as hard, but he's been there, right? Like, so he knows how hard that can be to make changes mid through your career, or some things will come naturally to some guys. And so he brings all that technical expertise with a little more sort of been there, done that, including on the other side of that teaching as a student, he brings that experience. And so I wasn't at all surprised. Like, I knew he'd be an NHL goalie coach if he so chose to be, after he got into coaching. And I was happy that it's in Toronto, because I know it's close to home for him, but also, like, you know, just for the organization, I knew they were getting a really good goalie coach.
Well, definitely. And that's something I guess the Leafs have been searching for, and they always want to have that cutting edge. And if you can't have, you know, the taskmaster in Clark, not so bad to get a disciple in Sanford. And I'm wondering, there's a goaltender, Ilya Samsonov. We talked about him just a moment ago. Confidence has been a thing. Obviously, his play hasn't been what it was last year. What can you give us on Ilya Samsonov, in your opinion, that might, A, either give us a glimmer of hope that Samsonov of last year is on the way back? Because he didn't look too bad against Seattle. Wasn't called upon a whole ton, but he did look more confident in his movement, in my opinion. I don't know a whole ton about movement and goaltenders, but at least was going post to post like he did last year and seemed to be effortless. And where earlier in the season, it seemed to be more helter-skelter, or he wasn't reading it right. So I'm wondering, for Samsonov, what do you see here? Should we be excited by what we've seen on Sunday, or should we be tempering our expectations and saying, hey, maybe he's not going to rebound to where he was?
Well, I don't think it's a coincidence that he had the performance he had Sunday, because, as you said, it was a night where, and this isn't a criticism at all, it's just like everything in front of him was a lot more controlled, yep. Right? And so, and when things did break down and there was some scramble saves, and there were some excellent ones he made, where he had to scramble and go goalie 9-1-1 a little bit, and he's got that in him, right? And so, yep. and he made some tough saves, even if it maybe, I would argue, they weren't the prettiest at times, right? He battled, and he's got that in him. And those are all good things. And the success he had last year was behind a team that, you know, I talked about those numbers with Tampa Bay. Like, that's Toronto over the past number of years. Like, for you know, I can't remember how many years now, but I kept hearing about, you know, like this offensive juggernaut, the Leafs, and how they're not a good defense. Like, they've been a good defensive team for a long time. Yeah, they're not this year. Right. Like, they're not that anymore. You watch them more than I, but I saw it here in Vancouver. I saw the types of chances they're giving up. I look at the numbers, you know, I mean, when I look at last year, 5-on-5, high danger, expected goals against, they're fifth in the league. We talked about rush chances, third best in the league, penalty kill, first best in the league. You know, I fast forward now, 17th 5-on-5 overall, 10th against the rush. Not terrible, still top 10.
Yep.
24th on the penalty kill.
The penalty kill is a killer for the squad this year.
And so you've got a much less predictable environment for a goaltender. And I think the word you used just now that is the most important when it comes to Ilya is reads. And I say, you know, like everything in goaltending is a sliding scale, right? Like you got your goalies that rely on technique and goalies that rely on reads. Like if there's a sliding scale of that, everybody has a different point. And there's a number of different skill sets and everybody has different points. And again, that's the beauty that I like about it. There is no, this is the formula that's best.
Everybody it's not cut and dry.
Right. Everybody brings a different formula. I've talked since Ilya was there. There are physical limitations that he has in his game. That narrow butterfly is always going to produce a lot more sort of pinball action back there in tight. It's going to leave him pitched forward when he has to extend a leg because he doesn't have the flexibility to have a wide flare underneath him to stay over his knees and have that down low coverage. It causes delays in movements when he has to scramble because, again, narrow butterfly means your feet are more behind you. If my feet are out nice and wide beside me in a wide butterfly, I can grab an edge just by barely lifting that knee and go east-west. If my feet are behind me, I've got to pull that knee up and that skate out to get rotation to make a push. There are delays. It takes longer. Like there are just, you know, and I've always sort of looked at that and I'm like, man, like, is that just a physical thing that'll never change or has he worked at it? Yeah, I'm not sure, to be honest with you. And I still think he's a goalie that relies on reads. So give him an environment that's more predictable and he can still have that success. Give him, like, every goalie is going to be worse behind a worse environment, and it's a worse environment this year.
Yeah.
But I think there are some guys that rely more on it, right? Like, and so if the reads are tough to trust and he's in scramble mode more often, as much as I love his battle, the earlier and more often you end up in goalie 9-1-1 mode, the more chances you're going to get exposed. Because for him, with that, those sort of physical limitations I talked about, like, you end up sort of going to your last move earlier.
Yeah. Your finisher, basically.
Yeah. It's a little harder to just stay over your knees and move around back there. Like you're, you know, one of those table hockey goalies, right? You know, just like these goalies now, like with those super wide flares, it's like, you know, they lift the knee just barely, make a little, you know, little tweak with the ankle, little edge with the toe, and bam, they're across the crease and they haven't given them any coverage. They haven't spread out. They haven't had to open up. They're just position to position over top of their knees, access to their hands. And there are, you know, Ilya doesn't have that. And some of it is, there are some things in his skating that puts him in a bad spot. Like technically, saw some progression last year, but it's limited. And I just,
yeah,
you know, and this is a guy who early in his career, like, you know, left the Washington camp with some instructions on things they wanted him to work with. And, you know, when it's Mitch Korn giving those instructions, you'd think there'd be, you know, a receptiveness.
Yeah.
But, you know, goes back to Russia and didn't want to work on them. That wasn't how we wanted to play. I think sometimes when you have that pedigree, saw this with Jacob Markstrom here. It's worked for me to this point. Like, this is why I'm good. I'm the best goalie, not in the NHL. You know, we've heard that label for guys. When you have that pedigree and you have success playing your way, sometimes it's harder to get you to buy into changes. And I thought coming out of Washington, given the way it ended there, late, like we're talking the last half of the last season in Washington, he was finally receptive to some of these things. I thought we'd see more changes from him there, but I'm just not sure whether it's receptiveness or in terms of just digging in on the work side of things. He still looks to me a lot of times, not entirely the same, but like a similar goalie. And part of that is, you know, the physical, and part of that is the reliance on reads. And so unless they get back to being that tight team, he can still be the guy he was last year.
Yeah.
But the way he's playing is not going to have the same consistent impact that it did last year behind the team now. Like there's just more situations where he's, you know, put in a position that he gets extended early and there's only so much you can do.
Yeah. Well, like you said, it's going to the last, you know, trick in your bag early to make that save 10 bell and you're wide open. And I want to see Samsonov succeed, and the answer you gave me is very thought out, and it hurts me because I like Samsonov, and you hate seeing a guy in the media, you know, talk about trying to get his game back. But if the Leafs are what they are defensively and giving him more chances against, he's not really going to be conducive to him unless, again, he's fully open and receptive to what's being thrown at him to change some of those things. But again, maybe too late in his game to do those things.
Well, no, I mean, like, there's also like, and I shouldn't be, I don't want that to, it came across probably more negative than I intended it. You know, as those reads get less predictable, it's not like they're not like those bottom three teams I talked about. Like, they're still, you know, still flirting with top 10 off the rush. It may not be what they were before, but there's probably an adjustment period for him too. Both when you talk about his confidence, because the numbers aren't going to be the same. Like, that's the other thing. Like, the numbers, yeah. You know, like he's well below expected this year, and he was way slightly above it last year. Some guys struggle with that. Like, some guys pay attention to their numbers, and like, he's going to have to, there might be adjustments, whether it's that or adjustments to the reads. Like, hey, the reads aren't the same as last year because we're giving up more. And so I got to hold my edges longer. I got to not commit early. Like, these things, there is a path forward whereby just getting comfortable that it's going to be different. And over time, you know, he'll become more confident in his reads, even as they become more difficult and tougher to rely on consistently, just because he's done them more. But if you try and read the game the same way you did last year with what they're giving up, you know, that's tough. And that's part of the adjustment he has to go through. So I'm not saying write him off by any stretch of the imagination.
No, I wouldn't write him off. I'm just saying, he may not get to the levels of last year.
Yeah, no goalie, like, to get to the levels of last year would require outplaying what he did last year by a significantly wider margin.
That's true.
It's just that much tougher.
Yeah, with what the Leafs are giving him. Well, a goaltender a lot of us want to know about is the Hildebeest.
Yeah, and I'm going to be honest with you. This might be a short segment because I didn't have a chance to do homework, and I do not like to talk out of my ass. So I have not seen a lot of video on him. I haven't seen enough to give you an educated opinion. And unlike the guys at the NHL level where I can pull up the numbers through ClearSight and then just watch all the video that coincides with the strengths and weaknesses, I don't have that ability in the American Hockey League. So my apologies. I'm a little short on time to sort of – it's tough to keep up with the NHL. I can't catch up in the A. So I don't have a ton for you.
No, the only question I'll ask you is, do you think he has a bona fide chance of being an NHL goaltender? That's the straight and narrow question I'll ask you on him. With what he's done in the AHL, obviously he's done well. But, you know, he got called up. Everybody was hoping maybe he'd get a game where everything was down with Samsonov and Jones was the goaltender and Wool was hurt. So I guess Leafs Nation just wants to know, do we have something here? And it says something worth maybe putting a little stock in fan-wise for this guy.
Well, I mean, he's got the size. Like, that's the thing about 6'7", man. Like, that is, you know.
Beast.
Yeah, I mean, the nickname's apt. There are advantages. Like, it's funny because everybody loves the 6'7", the 6'5", the 6'6". The reality is anything bigger than 6'3", 6'4", if we identify 6'3", I think a lot of goalie coaches tell you 6'3" is your ideal. You have to overcome your size on both ends of the scale. 4 inches taller, 4 inches lower. Now, the guys that are 4 inches smaller than 6'3" don't get the chance. The guys that are 4 inches taller get all kinds of chance because they fill up so much net. But the challenges are just different. Like, bigger goalies open bigger holes. The game has become incredibly dynamic east-west. So your ability, like, you got to skate in today's game. You can't, it's not just enough to skate from your knees, although some guys move from their knees as well as other guys do from their feet. It's not as easy to be as fast east-west, especially when you're that big. And that's the challenge. So just, you know, there are challenges. They're just different. Listen, man, he's rocking a 918. You know, early in his career this season, getting a chance to play more. What I can't tell you is how much of that is the team in front of them and how much of that is Dennis. But you combine that size with the crew he's working with. I'm a big fan of Henrik Toivonen as well, who they've got down there in the American Hockey League. I know he didn't come with a ton of coaching experience when he arrived. But, you know, when you talk to people around him about sort of what he brings, and then you add the voice, the sort of bringing in maybe a different look at the technical side to complement it with some of the things that Curtis would bring. And then Curtis McElhinney, like, you know, between Sanford and McElhinney, like, you know, they've got a really good group of people there, and you've got a goalie with a lot of skill, a lot of size. And so, yeah, like, without having seen the video to give you an honest Kevin Woodley opinion, I just trust the people around him that if they see it, it's probably there. what the upside is and when it might arrive, man, I'd be lying if I said I had a clue. But I certainly like the team they've built to help him take those steps. And when you see where he is at this point in his career early on, even if a lot of it is team influence, again, I don't know, that's a positive.
No problem. That is one goalie that maybe in a year's time I'll come back to you and ask some questions on and see where your opinion is there. One guy that we have exchanged messages on and I've been high on for the past couple of years, been wanting to see the brick wall more on the Maple Leafs crease. We're starting to see it this season. He got injured. You got to see him on the ice on the weekend. What is he looking like? Is he far away? Because I've had this opinion, a high ankle sprain. You got to move post to post and you got to slam your ankles and slam your feet probably a lot. And that's probably a pain threshold thing. But I mean, for the Leafs, I'd want this guy to be 100%.
Well, I think I was going to say, I don't know if it's a little bit of pain threshold, but it's also just like making sure you don't do any damage long term.
Yeah.
You know, I think of an MCL tear for a goalie, like you can come back after 3 months or 2.5 months or sometimes even 6 weeks, but it's 6 months before you're actually better. I've had a lot of guys tell me that one. Listen, I mean, I watched him skate. I would say that, you know, you obviously understand goaltending if you know that the post work is sort of the last step that you have to get comfortable with coming off an ankle sprain and a high ankle sprain like that. And, you know, I don't know where he is on that. I think a lot of the guesses I've seen around it are probably another couple weeks. But I'm with you, and I think they're on the same page. Like, you want to push it, but you don't want to go to push it to the point where you have a setback.
Yeah.
Because we can ask all the questions. Like, Martin Jones has been really good. I know there's a bit of a dip here recently, but he was really good coming in there. And it wasn't just the team. Like, Martin Jones was outperforming that environment by a significant margin for a while. You know, and yeah, hey, they got a good start out of Samsonov. Maybe he can get some confidence back. But at the end of the day, Joseph Woll is the future. Hopefully for the Maple Leafs, healthy enough to be the future this season. But I'm with you. You know, I remember being, you know, on with Kiprios and Bourne last year and, you know, asking about how they established sort of the pecking order of who gets what starts down the stretch last year and saying, like, I'd make sure I work in Joseph Woll because I think by the time you get to the playoffs, you might need him. You know, I did some video on him and did some work sort of looking at his game is so impressive. And then when you, like, we've had the chance to talk and get, you know, get to know the young man a little bit, that's impressive. Like, the future's so bright for him and for the Leafs in goal. Like to me, he's it. His skating, his hockey IQ, his goalie IQ, his edge work, his decision-making, his reads, some of the mechanics when he gets down on his knees on the ice. We talk about guys that can sort of move around, almost like I used the word with Shesterkin last or 2 years ago when he was having his heart. Like, he looks like a hovercraft out there.
Yep.
There's an element to that with Joseph Woll. And, just a real student of the game. Like, this kid's putting the work in, right? Like, he's doing the video work after games. He's making sure he's, you know, trying to consistently learn. I think he's got a great, you know, balance in terms of how he gets away from the game and knowing when to get away from the game that probably bodes well for the pressures of that market. There's just
very little social media for Joe Woll.
Yeah, no, between the ears and between the pipes, there's just so much to like. And listen, like, I'm biased towards the no stone unturned guys. Like, I've always been biased towards the guys that are always looking to get better. I think it's no coincidence. You know, some of the all-time greats, you look at Luongo, you look at Marc-Andre Fleury, both being in that 1,000 game club, like, they never stopped evolving. They were constantly looking for ways to. Fleury, even this year, like, he's got a new paddle on his stick that he, you know, thinks helps him in the butterfly. And I know the raw numbers on Fleury may not be flattering, but the adjusted numbers are still excellent, especially since the coaching change. Like, if teams are looking at him as an option in the Wild and him are up to it, he's definitely a guy that I would consider. So I don't think it's a coincidence that the guys that get to that stage that play that long are the guys that are always willing to look at new things. And yet, as much as I love the no stone unturned guys, I also recognize that, you know, it's a fine line. And you've got to be careful not to chase change when things aren't going well. Don't chase change for the sake of change as much as I want a constant evolution. Like, the position changes so much that if you're not constantly evolving, you're falling behind others. Joseph just seems to have a really good understanding of all that and a really good balance. He'll look at tools, figure out whether he wants to add it to his toolbox. He knows when he makes saves that are the result of a mistake and they end up looking spectacular. There's a lot of highlight reels do because he's made a mistake, but there's a foundation underneath that that even in moments of desperation where you might say afterwards, I could have done this differently and made my life easier, the foundation doesn't disappear. You know, I think of those backdoor saves on Tarasenko in the, you know, unfortunately the game that ended, you know, his season for a bit here with the ankle sprain, but yeah. Like, you know, yes, there's an element of desperation, but if you look at the way he loads both those pushes, like a lot of goalies with that wide, they look over and see a wide open backdoor and he leads with his eyes on everything. It's such a, it's a habit that the elite goaltenders have. And it's something that I know Curtis stresses and Joseph, whether he already did it or not, man, he does it at an elite level. Now everything is with the eyes, keeps his head for the most part down on pucks, which produces natural rotation. So the eyes are across first and Tarasenko's looking at an open net. A lot of goalies are just going to reach. They're going to, it's like, oh man, I don't have time to load up a push. I'm going to dive head first, get something to the middle of the net. Like as he sees that and understands in the first one that Tarasenko isn't one-teeing it because he's got early eyes.
Yeah,
he gains rotation underneath himself and loads up for a proper push to give himself a chance to move into that space and then still has the awareness because of the visual attachment to go desperation, but only after he's loaded a push. If he goes early and reaches early, he's just basically playing hit me. He's just sticking an arm out. He's got no access to the puck. He can't see it. He's playing hit me. That was an actual save. That wasn't just hit me. And you look at some of the habits that lead to moments like that and maintaining an element of technique, even in moments where you're abandoning at the end, like that foundation is, that'll carry you a long way. And there's just so much to like about his game. It's one tiny example. I mean, I've been blessed. I've had a chance, you know, in the past to go over video with him and watch how he watches. Even in the ankle sprain, he'll tell you he managed the post wrong on that one. Like he went into his post and put himself in a position that led to it. Like there's just a real, he's a student of the game. He's got all the physical tools. He has the mindset. Like, I don't know how much more I can gush about this guy. I think I think Leafs goaltending is in good hands for a long time, as long as there's a healthy Joseph Woll in the net for them.
Well, that's the only thing I think that is might be a draw of concern, is there has been a little bit of injuries with him. But, I mean, most of the things I think are things you can overcome. And
Welcome to goaltending in 2024.
That's it right there. But I'm excited for Joel Woll. You pretty much answered the next question, who should run with the Leafs crease. Obviously, we both probably agree it's Joel Woll when he's healthy and ready to go.
Yeah, and hey, listen, like there might be some growing pains coming back, trusting the ankle. Like, I don't know, right? Like I'm thinking of possibilities. Does it, just because he has all this talent doesn't mean that everything happens automatically and as soon as he shows up, he feels good about his game, right? But I trust the people. Again, you think of a Curtis Sanford. I've watched, you know, watching Clark here, working guys off rehab, knowing what drills will help them feel good. The relationship that Curtis has built with Joseph, where they know the work they're doing is designed to reinforce that foundation. And when can we add some dynamic elements so that, you know, when the play breaks down, because ultimately in today's game, it will 100%. Like there is, you know, like going over the video with them, it's like, it's not perfect, but it can't be perfect because the game's not perfect. Like, no. Like if
nothing's gotten dry.
Yeah,
everything changes.
Yeah, and if you're trying to be perfect behind it, that actually becomes problematic, right? And so, you know, when to get those drills going and what those drills look like so that they're a combination of drills that will make him feel good but are also pushing him into more reactive elements of his game. Like I just, you know, whether it's Hanu in the American League, Sandman in the NHL, or McElhenney overseeing it all, like – I just think they're in a really good spot. And, you know, like I said, I don't know Hildeby, but you know the people that are helping him and you see the numbers and you know the skill set, or you've heard about the skill set.
Yep.
I do know more about Joseph Woll, and I think you add that to the group they put there. And, you know, credit to Brad Treliving. You know, when John Elkin went to Pittsburgh, which don't think was a surprise to anyone given the relationship he had with Dubas.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to talk about the guys who are actually pioneers of the whole goalie department and having somebody in a director role, you know, Brad was one of them in Calgary with Jordan Sigalette, moving him into that role and hiring Jason LaBarbera, and a couple different guys since in the American League, Mackenzie Skapski right now. So you kind of knew that he understood the importance of having support for that position, and he's put an excellent crew in place again in Toronto. And you, it doesn't mean you just help the guys that are there. The idea is that you work together to find the next ones, whether it's in free agency, making sure you're finding guys that fit what you teach and what you believe in as strengths. You know, we think of height, like height doesn't matter without length, right? Like if you can't extend and lengthen over pads with your limbs, you know, height becomes even more restrictive. And so in Vancouver, Ian Clark talks about length. So I'm sure that's part of the dialogue now, you know, whether it's at the amateur side or on the pro scouting side, having a team like that allows you to build out a stable of goaltenders so that even if the next time Joseph Woll misses a post and ends up with an ankle sprain, you feel good about what you've got coming. I mean, you look at Columbus after Ian Clark left, man, they've still got Daniel Tarasov. Like Clarkie's been here in Vancouver for what, 5 years now? And they still have part of that pipeline coming up and hopefully being the next one to help them as they move after moving on from Sergei Bobrovsky, Merzlikins, Tarasov, you know, like those types of guys. That's the idea. Build out a department, build out a stable of goaltenders so you're never in a jam and you don't have to go shopping or buying from somebody else to fix it.
Well, that's the best way to be. Obviously, I like the fact that at least have a homegrown goalie coming along in Joe Woll. Maybe another one in Hillaby, we'll see. But there was some good news. We saw Joe Woll today via video going post to post, pushing off on that ankle very lightly, but just doing that, you know, back and forth. And I believe it was Sanford, Toivonen, and somebody else standing there watching that happen and basically instructing him what to do. So that comfort thing you just talked about, they're already trying to work that back with him just so he feels good probably when he does have to start actually pushing off and getting into that position. So there's one building block, and everybody you just talked about watching him do it and monitoring him and bringing him along. So I'm excited for Woll. I can't wait to talk to you when at least win the Stanley Cup, and it's Joe Woll with the cup over his head. Because, ladies and gentlemen, it will happen. You have to manifest these things. I manifested Joe Woll being the goaltender to Leafs. That has happened. Next thing is the cup. And then maybe you get a day with the cup with Joe Woll and you guys break down the video of how it all went to play.
Well, listen, like on my side of it, as a guy who's worked first for the Associated Press and now NHL.com as the day job covering the league, and in particular the Vancouver Canucks as the team I'm closest to here in Vancouver, I always say that like I don't cheer for teams. I only cheer for good stories and good people. And I think the Joseph Woll and the staff they've built there in Toronto fits both bills. So, I'm not cheering cause there's no cheering in the press box, but, I'd be happy to see it, for all the people involved.
Well, I appreciate that. And I appreciate you taking the time. It's been a little time coming together, but Kevin, I want to thank you very much for jumping on with me tonight, breaking down some stuff for the Leafs and goaltending in general. Where can everybody find your stuff in case they're already not following you?
Yeah, no, Kevin is In Goal on Twitter. And then, you know, In Goal Mag, In Goal Magazine, ingoalmag.com. Honestly, folks, like if you're listening and you're not a goalie, it's probably not for you. But if you are a goalie and you haven't checked it out, if you've got a son or a daughter who plays the position, if you're a goalie coach, there's a reason we have over 200 professional goalie coaches around the world, including most in the NHL that subscribe to the product. We take you on the ice with NHL goalies. We take you into video sessions where NHL goalies break down their reads and their saves. They talk about their equipment, some of the customizations, how they like certain things to play, how they set it up so that they're optimized. You talk about those moves Woll makes, the double seal on the post, like, you know, how he has his toe ties so that when he goes into a toe lock, he's got the right push pressure. If you're a goalie, whether it's a young one, a teenager, a junior, college, major junior, pro goalie subscribe, or a beer leaguer, we have something that you will basically benefit from. Tools in the toolbox, as we say. We don't tell you how to play. We just show you how all these guys do it, and you decide what works for you. That's what I love, as I said earlier, about the position. There's no one way. Show you as many different ways as possible, and it's actually the NHL goalies that are showing us. And then we bring that message from them, oftentimes directly to you. And so, yeah, if you're a goalie, we'll make you a better goalie.
Love it, man. Yeah, check it out. Check out In Goal Mag. Make sure you go to InGoalMag.com and check out Kevin Woodley over on Twitter. And, of course, you can hear him on the radio and other places as well. The man breaks down everything. But I appreciate it so much that you took the time with me and answered my questions, my friend. I want to say have a good night, everyone that's listening. because this is Offside Hockey Talk, where the Maple Leafs and hockey come to talk.